Hello and welcome to the 7 Minutes Podcast, episode 16. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
I am the other host, Angela.
Two out of two.
I am the third host, Robert.
3 out of 3, rather. Cool. All right. Before we jump into today's topic, we are going to, as traditional, talk about what we have been playing since previously recording. Robert, how about you?
I tried out Diablo 2 Resurrection a bit.
Oh, yeah.
We're working on that for a review. That's been cool. I've never played Diablo. Well, I've played Diablo 3 a bit, but none of the older Diablos. I've been liking it. And then I've been playing... I've been stuck on, like, a bunch of Super Nintendo games. I don't know why. I just got an itch, and so I've been playing with the Super Nintendo app on Switch Online and playing a lot of Mario World and a lot of Yoshi's Island.
What are you playing as in Diablo? You seem like a barbarian. I don't know what you would play, but you seem like a barbarian, personally.
No, I'm not. Thank you. Although, what was I? What did I pick?
You'd have to tell me.
You were there. You saw me playing it.
It just looked like a brown mess on screen.
Mm. He had a sword, right? And a shield?
Yeah, I forget what it was. A knight? Although I don't think it's called a knight.
Like a paladin?
I think it was a paladin then. Yeah.
Warrior?
A paladin.
Cool. And then you said you were embarrassing yourself in Mario World and Yoshi's Island?
Doing very well, thank you. I found...
That's not the story the screen told.
I found the secret zone. Got through all those stages.
Zach was being awfully harsh. He was watching Robert play.
He's judgy. He thinks he's better than me.
I come from a generation that knew how to play a Mario game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Angela.
Oh, I haven't really been playing anything lately. Not on console other than Animal Crossing. I haven't even gotten to play Final Fantasy 14. I can't even say that this week.
Yeah.
Breath
of fresh air, in a way.
Yeah. But I am gearing up to play Metroid this Friday. At the time that we're recording, Metroid Dread comes out on Friday. And I'm really looking forward to that. I think it looks very good.
Let's hope it's decent.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's great, even.
I would hope it's great rather than decent.
Zach's refusing to buy it at launch for no reason.
I tend not to buy games at launch.
I don't really understand. But it's just because I started a new job this week, and I've been spending some kind of late nights, you know, getting ramped up. So it has cut into my video game time, but I'm hoping to fix that.
On the other hand, I've been playing a fair bit. I previously played Ghost of Tsushima, and a couple months back, the DLC for that came out. And maybe it was a month ago. I'm not sure. But there's a single-player expansion, Iki Island, or the Ghost of Iki Island, one or the other. Played through that. I kind of feel like mostly it's just more Ghost of Tsushima. Hmm. Like, if you like the base game, you're probably going to like this. I don't think it's really vital. Like, I think the story, the arc of Ghost of Tsushima kind of stands on its own. Mostly it's just more Ghost of Tsushima. They give you a couple new enemy types, and they let your horse do like a battering ram charge move, which is kind of cool.
Hmm.
The story kind of, it's like a side story that stands on its own. You can do it during the main game or after. But it doesn't really, the story doesn't feel particularly vital. Like, it's fine, but it does kind of feel like filler as far as the story goes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a huge loss if you only play the base game, but I would still recommend the Iki Island DLC.
I'm going to play it, but my problem is that the memory on my PS4 is beyond maxed out. And I think I would have to re-download Ghost of Tsushima, and that would mean having to prioritize other things and delete things. What I really just need to do is buy an external hard drive. That's what I need to do. And then I can re-download it and not have to delete something.
Well, it seems like a waste of money, but...
No, I mean, it's been very frustrating having to, like, because I played a lot of, like, big games one after the other. I played Final Fantasy VII Remake when that came out, and I think Ghost of Tsushima came after, whatever order. It involved, like, having to delete stuff. Like, I had played, what's that game called? It's set in Hong Kong. You're a triad. Well, you're an undercover cop posing as a triad.
Oh, Sleeping Dogs.
Yeah, I'd play that. That was actually really good, but then, like, I had to delete that. So it's just been this never-ending, like, having to, like, delete stuff to make room. And I really just need to bite the bullet and get an external hard drive for my PS4.
Waste of money. Okay. After the Ghost of Tsushima DLC, I've played a couple more Assassin's Creed games. I kind of went and binged on Assassin's Creed games around, like, November to January of last year. And then... there's only so much Assassin's Creed you can play in a row, so...
there's also only so much Assassin's Creed you can take sitting and watching Assassin's Creed.
Whatever. So I played Black Flag, which I had expected to be one of the better games, because it's one of the ones people talk up as their favorite. You play as a pirate. You get to sail a ship around the Caribbean. Do piratical things.
I could deal... without the sea shanties.
Oh, the sea shanties are great. Yeah, you can collect sea shanties and then your crew sings old-fashioned sea shanties.
Yeah.
And so it takes place in, like, the end of the golden age of piracy, so, like, the early 1700s. It's a cool setting. All the big pirates you know are from then.
Luffy?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Including Luffy.
Just making sure.
I wasn't really expecting the story to hit as hard as it did. As an adult, I haven't... cried at many games, and this managed to draw tears from me. So far unique among the Assassin's Creed games for that, and I think also maybe the only Western made game that's made me, like, actually cry while playing. But I think it's really good. Without going deep into what the story is, I think it does a good job with the whole cast of characters, not just the lead, and I think all the arcs are handled really well, the themes are handled well, and it is genuinely really, like, bittersweet and kind of a perfect ending. But I've also jumped into what I understand to be the longest Assassin's Creed game, Odyssey.
Feels like it.
Yeah. And I can say more about that at a future date, because I'm sure I will still be playing Odyssey the next time we record. But it builds on some of the kind of open world RPG changes the previous Assassin's Creed Origins made, and does it takes more influence from Witcher 3 than the previous game Origins did, in terms of, like, dialogue choices, unexpected results from quests, focus on, like, side quest dilemmas, and the combat is also markedly better than it was in Origins. People tend to prefer Origins to Odyssey, at least if you go to, like, Assassin's Creed subreddit or whatever, but I think they have this one wrong, at least so far. Maybe it'll be too bloated and they'll put me off, but I think Odyssey is really good. Go ahead, Angela, it seems like you have a burn. You want to...
It's a snooze fest.
Okay, there you go.
It doesn't matter which game has better combat. It doesn't matter. They're just terrible.
Okay.
All right. Just terrible.
I'll make a heated defense of Odyssey, but I can do that another time after I've decided that it is, in fact, worth making a heated defense of.
I mean, it wouldn't actually be so bad if you didn't have to cut to the modern parts and you have, like, these annoying, insufferable characters, like, what's her name, Layla or something like
that?
Yeah,
that's been...
Man, what an asshole.
Sure. That's been, like, 5 minutes of game time out of how many hours?
Doesn't matter, because you get all immersed and then... you have to deal with these clowns who are not interesting people.
I'm not going to bat for the Layla sections of this game.
I'm just saying.
The ancient Greek sections of this game.
These games would just be better if they didn't have all that going on.
Spoken like a true casual. All right. Let's jump in to the topic at hand.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. We're talking this week about...
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. We're talking about WoW. What's the big WoW video games? Settings. The whole scenario, the whole world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As you know, there are 5 major food groups of video game settings. I'm not sure what those are, but another way I see it, you have like modern day settings, historical settings, you got fantasy, you got sci-fi, and you got nonsense cartoon worlds.
See, that's how you interpreted it, but I was thinking things like, I hate desert worlds. Ice worlds are kind of boring. I like tropical worlds.
Mm. Is that across the board, or like you talking about like a kind of a cartoony Mario game setting in general? Like if you playing like a gritty open world RPG and you get to the tundra, are you like this is BS?
Mm, not as much as if we got to the desert area.
Okay,
the gritty open world game. Desert areas always suck. The only game that I've ever experienced that did a desert setting well, and that was one of the reasons I knew it was one of the greatest games I'd ever played, was Mario Galaxy 2. I got to the desert, and I was like, wow, this is still enjoyable, and it's actually pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, we can camp out on different, like, video game biomes, you know. Biomes. So, like, your favorite desert that you've ever played was in Mario Galaxy 2. Mm-hmm. And even then, that sounds like it probably wasn't your favorite part of the game. It was just good enough to tolerate.
No, it was still good. Like, okay. It was just,
all right.
That whole game, masterpiece. Far superior to the first Galaxy.
All right. I've been trying to think of deserts.
Gerudo Desert?
No, I actually don't really like the deserts in any of the Zelda games.
You know, they're not my favorites, but I like Gerudo Desert in Ocarina of Time. I also like that there seems to be a little confusion, a bit of an identity crisis going on in Gerudo Valley, because they went with kind of, you know, like Spanish-inspired music and mm-hmm. kind of like adobe clay structures, but the Gerudo themselves seem to be very like kind of Middle Eastern inspired. So there's just this kind of interesting amalgamation of two different kind of real world cultures brought together, and I think it's weird and it's super interesting, and it works. And the Spirit Temple is one of my favorite temples, so
it's like a Mediterranean amalgam, right?
Yeah. Whereas I feel like the desert area in Twilight Princess, Gerudo Desert in Twilight Princess, it wasn't as interesting. I didn't really love going through there. The only thing I really liked about it was the Arbiter's Grounds, because the Arbiter's Grounds were creepy.
I hated going through the desert in Twilight Princess. It just feels empty and big and boring.
Yep. And boring. Yep. Agreed.
That's a big part of why deserts can underwhelm sometimes in games. They just don't lend themselves to particularly interesting architecture.
Yeah, and I mean, the desert isn't very big in Ocarina of Time, especially when you go beyond Gerudo Valley and into the Haunted Wastelands. You have some interesting things, like the weirdo hippie, mm-hmm. a merchant who's just floating in a sandstorm. Or there's an outpost that you can stop at along the way, and you know, you just kind of wonder, like, oh, I wonder why is this outpost here? What's the story with this outpost? And there's not a whole lot going on, but it's somehow still more interesting than Twilight Princess's desert.
For me, I think the desert that stuck out to me the most is actually from Assassin's Creed Origins, which takes place in ancient Egypt during the time of like Julius Caesar and Cleopatra. Mm-hmm. It's actually probably, I think, the most effective thing about that game is just it's obviously it's not to scale, but they recreated pretty much the whole of Egypt, like multiple cities, huge expanses between them. So you have, it's not just what you're imagining, which is like sand and some oases and some pyramids. There's a lot of variety, but it's still obviously really dominated by these bright golden deserts. Mm-hmm. And it's just really kind of arresting and breathtaking to see all of that. It is still, like, if you compare it to other Assassin's Creed games, for example, there aren't as many interesting things to climb. It's obviously not as dense. You spend more time on horseback or camelback, which I certainly opted for because mm-hmm. they move funny. And you riding it around, you can... This is actually kind of cool. In the new Assassin's Creed games, if you press up on the D-pad, you kind of see through the eyes of your pet eagle. And so you get these bird's eye views of the landscape too. So it's gorgeous. It's not as gamey as you get in like Mario Galaxy, but
I do like the desert world in Mario Odyssey, because I like the little mariachi looking
that's a fun
skull people
mm-hmm. mashup.
They're
yeah.
very cute. And then we get Mario in his poncho and his sombrero.
Yeah,
it's great.
So, Robert, deserts were your least favorite kind of video game biome? Okay. Angela?
I just have never really been interested in the Japanese high school setting. I feel like it's just so overused and played out. And I understand that there is cultural significance mm-hmm. to your high school experience in Japan. It's almost a little depressing how I've heard it described as like basically for a lot of not, this is not clearly not a universal experience, but for many Japanese people, it kind of seems like life peaks in high school because after that you get inundated in your career and, you know, you become a salaryman, or which is a little bit of an outdated trope, but you know, you become a salaryman, you become a career, you know, working in an office or whatever, and your days are long and hard and extremely stressful and monotonous. And it was like, oh, what it was, you know, what I would give to be back in high school again. And so like, I kind of understand from that perspective why it appears so much in mm-hmm. Japanese developed games. But I think part of the reason it doesn't work for me is because a lot of the characters can just be obnoxious. They're not very likable. A lot of them are just very kind of tropey. And so I just don't really find it super interesting.
Can you think of any cases where it did work for you? Or games that take place in a setting like that where you like the setting?
No, not games. Manga, but not games.
That's a whole different podcast.
Yeah.
Doesn't belong here on 7 minutes.
No,
I guess that setting doesn't bug me too much. It doesn't necessarily interest me that much either. I guess I would say I'm neutral to it. The setting I feel like has been played to death is the, you know, the steampunk
yep.
thing.
Yes.
Like, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a description of some game that's coming out. It's a steampunk aesthetic. It's like, why did it take you 5 minutes? You just throw a dart at a board and in the middle of it and just, steampunk! It's like, okay.
I think it can be cool, steampunk.
Well, I mean, it can be cool. I feel like, it's just played out. It's like Metroidvania. It's like every indie dev is like, let's make a Metroidvania. It's like, that was cool 20 Metroidvania games ago. Like, let's do something new.
Yeah,
you say that, but you guys both just indicated you're gonna buy the Metroid. New Metroidvania from Mercury Steam coming out this Friday.
It's called Metroid.
Yeah, it's called Dread. Metroid. It's called the best.
But I actually feel that way about, and this is funny because I actually like this setting, but I do feel that way about like the post-apocalyptic zombie setting. You know, I don't know how many of those games we've gotten now.
How many deeks do you need?
Oh, God. But even though those games scare me and I can't really play them alone very well, I actually do like them. There's something incredibly creepy about, it's obviously fake. You know that it's fake. But when you become immersed and invested in the story, things can get, like, average things can just get creepy. Especially when the environmental storytelling is very good. Like walking into a house and you see, you know, how it looked before the family had to flee. And then you're left thinking, like, what happened to those people? You know, but, nothing happened to them because it's not real. But, you know, you just start thinking that way. And so I think it's really, really interesting. Like in, Days Gone, I think I've talked about this before, but they do a really good job at the environmental storytelling, and you find notes that people have left to families, and you find diaries, kind of like, you know, in The Last of Us, and video recordings from the Nero agents, and you hear them, you know, dying some tragic death, you know, like getting hit by a runaway train or getting mobbed by zombies, just these very interesting things. And so even though
they're talking with a tape recorder.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, oh my God, oh, we're getting over. You know, dead air. So, can't wait to hear that played back. So even though it's a kind of an overused setting at this point, I actually enjoy them. I think despite being scared by them.
Yeah, I will first of all back you up on not liking the Japanese high school setting. It's a reason I've never given like the Persona games a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Or Danganronpa also.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blocker for me. And for the post-apocalyptic stuff, like Last of Us or Days Gone or whatever, I don't love it. I really don't. I don't know if it's just that it's common enough that it seems too obvious and it's kind of boring in that, but it's just like the stuff I know, but a little run down is basically the setting, right? Yeah. It's like, well, that's not super exciting. I do really like it in Nier Automata, but in that game, you're coming to it from like a more alien perspective. Mm-hmm. It's not like there are no humans left in the world, which feels more interesting than a bunch of humans shacked up with shotguns saying, mm-hmm. get off my property, you know? So it's kind of has like a more almost otherworldly feel to it in Nier Automata, where they are just these strange structures that might as well be mountains. Mm. They just used to be skyscrapers.
Kind of going off of what I was saying before, specifically, you know, other than just like the post-apocalyptic horror or zombie horror, Japanese horror setting is really creepy.
Did often, you have something specific in mind?
I tried to play two different Fatal Frame games. Fatal Frame, I think two is Crimson Butterfly, and then the Maiden of Black Water or something, the one that was on the Wii U.
Is that the one that kind of was like a little booby?
Yeah, I mean,
like little baby doll dress up.
Yeah, options. You know, people were all offended or whatever. But so the settings, the Japanese horror setting, would be extremely, extremely creepy. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is more disturbing and scary than even like something like Resident Evil 7. But it just is, and it really works. Even a game where it's not it's not prominent, like in Okami, there's that house that is there's like the old couple that's living in it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah, and
yeah, they're actually like demons or whatever.
Mm-hmm. The Cutters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super creepy, and it works so well. And that's like one of my favorite places in the game. Or even like in Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. You can get, Zach's rolling his eyes, you can get items or craft items that you can make to look, you can craft to make your campsite look like a haunted Japanese area. So you can get like a haunted TV. And so like you can craft the TV and the TV is just like constantly, you know, dead air, or like a haunted well. And so I think all that was really creepy and really works.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to say it's more genre than setting, but I guess there are enough like tropes of set design. And so I guess that counts. I'll allow it. Cool. Do we all hate water worlds?
Only one person at this table hates
you.
Water worlds.
Yeah.
It's you.
And that's more Zach, for gameplay.
Bearded tyrant.
Mm-hmm. But I don't really like tropical vacay style settings.
Why not?
I do like the
Costa del Sol, like one of the best places in Final Fantasy 14. Yes,
no,
it is.
Don't care for it.
Yes, it is.
What a lie.
Yeah.
Oh man, this sucks.
It's one of my least favorite areas in Eorzea, Costa del Sol.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Wineport on the other side of Eastern Lanosha. It's got kind of like Raincatcher Gully to the south.
Mm-hmm.
I like tropical jungles. I think that's really cool. Especially put like a hidden temple in there, right? Yeah. That's fantastic.
What about...
Give me some Mayan nonsense stuck in a jungle.
What about Costa del Sol in Final Fantasy VII?
Also don't care for that.
Why not?
It's just like a beach.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a resort town.
Yeah.
This is why Mario Sunshine is one of the greatest games ever.
And yeah, why he despises it.
That's actually what I was thinking of when I said I don't like tropical settings. There's Mario Sunshine, Delfino Plaza is exactly.
Tropical areas. Yeah.
And the really good sunsets and the water.
Best
and...
water in any game ever.
Any game ever.
So it seems like we can't reach a consensus here.
To Trump won. That's a consensus. You've been defeated.
So it sounds like a razor-thin margin to me. Let's not oversell it.
No.
But yeah, Mario Sunshine. Oh, man. All that tropical, the water setting. That's when That's when Nintendo really started to cement its ability to do lighting really well. I think that in recent years, Nintendo has like become masterful with it. But the way the water... Not just the way it looks, but the way the sunshine glints across it. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
I always looked forward to going to Great Bay in Majora's Mask. it gets a little better once you've saved the world and you know, things don't feel as creepy and the creepy music isn't on the beach, but it's really cool.
So I got nothing bad to say about Great Bay and Majora's Mask because I did not make it far enough into the game to get to Great Bay and Majora's Mask. But
sad.
I was actually looking, for unrelated reasons, I was looking at footage of Mario Sunshine earlier today and was kind of surprised by
how spiffy it is.
How ugly it is, glorious. Honestly. Yeah.
It's not ugly.
I think
the mental gymnastics he had to go through to get here.
I can appreciate the look of Mario 64. And I think Mario Galaxy and Beyond looks great, but Mario Sunshine is like in some weird Dreamcast-y middle zone where it just doesn't look right. The whole thing is like too plastic to be relaxing.
This take is stone cold. You couldn't even microwave it. Terrible. Anyway, speaking of Mario and water settings, in Odyssey, there's a couple of really, really nice watery areas, but in particular, the beach level in that one with the giant chalice that you can get inside of. Oh man, all that water is incredible too.
I think that might have been my least favorite level.
What a coincidence.
I mean, there was like one that was like kind of a self-contained lake, and then there was one with like an island with a beach around it, right?
Yeah, I think you're thinking of the beach one. I'm thinking of the beach one.
Yeah, did not like that. The lake one was at least shorter than most of them, but it's still an underwater level, and therefore
I think one of the most impressive feelings I ever had in a game was in Twilight Princess when you are fighting that big eel thing underwater, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the sense of scale in that chamber is incredible.
Yeah.
And, like, I think it's... I might be getting this wrong a bit, but I swear I think that once you defeat the boss, you actually see the water emptying. And as it's emptying, you get a greater sense of like, wow, I was in this giant, just enormous tub full of water. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly neat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another water setting. It's a pretty cool water temple in that game.
Yeah, well, opinions differ. If we're talking about settings in terms of biomes, I've always been a fan of like snowy or icy areas.
This is one of my least favorites. It may be my least favorite.
First of all, it's great in a video game when the ground is slippery.
No.
And you fall into a pit accidentally. I love it.
Like, whether you're talking Mario or Zelda or even like... I remember when I got to Days Gone, I was really bored by the snow area. I don't care for it. I just feel like games never really do very much to make it very interesting. I don't really care for the snow areas.
I really like the snow areas in Icewind Dale. That's definitely part of why I prefer that to Baldur's Gate, because the whole thing does place in the far north. But you spend part of it, it's not monotonous. You spend part of it in like snowy plains. You spend some of it in mountains, some in like caverns. There's like volcanic islands mixed in, so it's not monotonous. You don't want to go too monotonous with whatever setting you do. And I think there's some games where the snow areas can be a little one note. They also sometimes come bundled with kind of unpleasant survival mechanics, like if you run out of food or heat.
That's why you just go to Freeze Easy Peaks in Banjo-Kazooie. Pretty sure that's what that area is called. The Big Snowman.
Oh yeah, no, big actually
Christmas tree.
I think that's as far as I got when I played Banjo-Kazooie. I didn't like it at all, and I think that's where I stopped, actually. Which is weird, because I normally like ice levels.
It was one of the greatest games ever.
Banjo-Kazooie.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Anyone have anything to contribute that's not a bald-faced lie?
Banjo-Kazooie's great. It's coming to N64 online for Nintendo Switch Online. It's going to be great.
Who cares?
Everyone who's an awesome Nintendo fan.
Why don't you care for Banjo-Kazooie? What's your problem?
It just feels like a playable checklist.
Hmm.
It doesn't feel like fun to move. It feels like every world is just like, well, you got to get all these Jinjos, you got to get all these Nos, you got to get all these, you know, it's just like, but that feels like that's pretty much all the game that there is.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's sad.
Anyhow.
I like urban settings in games.
Yeah, me too.
So we talked about this in a previous podcast, but like part of the allure of Tony Hawk was that the Tony Hawk on Nintendo 64, the first one, part of the allure for me was that it was like a real world. And it felt like, you know, actual settings, you know, in a way that other N64 games didn't. At least in terms of the ones that I played up to that point.
Isn't that more post-apocalyptic? I was watching you play this and it's like it's an empty...
No, no, you're thinking of the remake. That's mm-hmm. I said the N64 one.
Okay, does that one have people in the mall? And
You're still in the mall after hours, but mm-hmm. it's not dilapidated. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, you have the school, you have the mall, you have the warehouse. Like, it felt like a slice of life. Mm-hmm. And then as time has gone by, we've gotten more and more games where the settings in these urban sprawls are just more and more realistic. And I always think that's neat to look at. The Yakuza games do a really good job of making you feel like you're in Japan. Mm-hmm. And like those games are also pretty successful with putting a decent amount of content in the buildings themselves. Because that's one drawback with like these urban recreations. That's just a bunch of empty rectangles that you can't go into or do anything. But
yeah,
the Yakuza series gives you a lot to at least go and explore.
That was one of my complaints about Sleeping Dogs, is that I wish there were more stores you could go into. There were some areas that, like, the areas you could go into buildings and you could interact with was actually super interesting. But I just got a lot of enjoyment and entertainment out of, out of crashing, into cars and into people. And I mean,
you loved crashing into people.
Oh my God. Like I would,
I know, 'cause you did it all the time.
So most of the time, it was unintentional. I got actually pretty good at driving and going top speeds, flying through traffic, weaving through cars and in bumper-to-bumper traffic. And then when you go on the freeway, that was another additional challenge. That was actually really fun. And like you could actually go onto the freeway via an on-ramp, get off via an off-ramp. Like it was really cool. Mm-hmm. The different things you could do in the city, like because you could choose to be more of a cop or you could choose to be more of a triad. And if you were a cop, you could like go back to like the CCTV in your apartment and look for drug busts. And so you would have to figure out on the map, and it was a pretty large map of Hong Kong, exactly what street corner, what empty lot or what alleyway this drug deal was happening in. And like there was, it was more complex. It involved like cracking codes and getting security cameras on and stuff, but it was super interesting and a really fun game. It certainly shows its age a little bit in terms of voice acting and graphics for sure. And some kind of clunky mechanics now, but, that was a super fun game, but the urban setting is what really makes it. I just wished so much that there were more stores you could go in.
I vaguely recall the combat being really like counter heavy, kind of like classic Assassin's Creed, where you're just kind of like waiting for, yeah. You can like punch a guy, but you were like waiting for that counter opportunity to open them up.
Yeah. And like I said, it was a little clunky. Mm-hmm. If they were to remake that game, they could definitely smooth out the combat. But yeah, one of the great, great joys was accidentally running over people.
So long, Grandpa.
Yeah. Or like if you crashed into a wall going fast enough, you could be thrown, like ejected from the car. And the ragdoll mechanics and...
That's great. That's actually one of the things that's disappointing about like racing games is oftentimes like the... Like in Burnout, when you crash a car in Burnout Paradise,
yeah,
there's no you that like flies out the windshield.
Yeah, oh no.
It's just the car.
You fly out the windshield with a pretty good scream to accompany it. And I just remember, like I said, most of the times it was an accident. And so I'd be sitting there late at night playing alone and I would just start busting up laughing. There were times when I was laughing uncontrollably because the situation was just so comical and it was so ridiculous. But it was just so funny.
Have either of you played the Deus Ex games?
No. Mm-hmm.
It just seems, I haven't either, but they seem like they would be like modern day games where you would spend more time going into interiors. I don't know if there's like much of an exterior world, but.
Mm-hmm. I loved L.A. Noir and how it recreated Los Angeles in whatever it is, the 30s or 40s. Mm-hmm. I thought it was neat because my dad saw me playing it And my dad loves, like, cities and architecture and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so he saw where I was, and I told him it's Los Angeles. And so he started telling me what streets to go down because he knew the layout, and it matched. And he said, if you go here and then you go here, you'll get to a theater. And sure enough, there was a theater. It was really neat.
I think I remember playing, this is obviously not nearly as accurate, but I think I was playing one of the Crazy Taxi games before I knew it was based in San Francisco. And I'm like driving around, not really paying much attention to stuff. And I'd be like, oh, this is kind of laid out. Wait a minute.
I even though it's not urban in the modern sense, games like Witcher 3, where you're in these, you know, shitty little rundown podunk villages, and then you get to a giant city, you know, like Novigrad or whatever. That was really satisfying, like getting to those gigantic cities and finding all these like interesting places to go. And
I like the idea of the contrast, but I really don't like Novigrad as much as the rest of the settings in that game. I much prefer like the shitty ass swamps and like the crags of Skellige much more than the alleys of Novigrad.
Yeah, that was, I thought they did a decent job in Breath of the Wild of giving you fairly full towns. And there's like not a lot of them. It's one of those brilliant things where they get away with it because of the setting. Because it's like, oh, Ganon slaughtered everyone. So, you know, there's only a few pockets left of towns and villages to go to. But what's there are all really neat and memorable. In fact, that's a desert setting that I found memorable. When you get to the Gerudo, that whole desert town is really cool. And then even the is it the Rito?
The bird people?
Yeah, is it the Rito or the Rudo?
The Rito.
Or the Rito.
The Rito. Their little mountain retreat, you know, and the verticality of it, it's really well done. So it's like, you know, you have urban sprawl, but also just cities in general, and they're dense and full of things to do. Those are always fun.
I don't want to make this the Assassin's Creed podcast, but well, no, like that's kind of a thing that Assassin's Creed I think does better than any other series I've ever played, with Unity in particular, but the games in general. But like the recreation of Revolutionary era Paris in Unity is really impressive. Just the Notre Dame on its own is one of the most breathtaking things I've ever seen or explored in a game. But all of Paris is just filled with a ton of interiors you can go into, just people living their lives, walking around, demonstrating against the tyranny of King Louis, you know, complaining about Marie Antoinette and all that cake stuff. You know how it is. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sitting here while you were talking. I was thinking of Sleeping Dogs again. Excuse me. Sorry. And I was holding in laughter because I was just imagining, I was just remembering, you know, like I had gone on to an off, I was going off, getting off the freeway on an off ramp, and I was going way too fast. And instead of being able to make the curve, I hit the wall going probably like 90 or whatever. But it was an, like almost like an, it was an elevated off ramp. So I can't remember the name of the main character anymore, but he goes flying through the windshield, gets ejected, hits the ground below. But my car was blocking traffic. So traffic, people driving on the street will react to you blocking traffic. So they'll start honking. You can actually create a buildup of cars. They'll start cussing. They'll start yelling, you know, in English and in Cantonese. And I just remember laughing. First of all, just cracking up laughing and getting thrown out of my car. But then laughing again, hearing the commotion and the traffic jam that I created above. And then having to walk all the way back to my, I mean, I didn't have to. I could go like carjack someone if I wanted, or just steal a car.
Just turn back around and make even more of a pile up.
Yeah, but I was trying to not laugh while you were talking because I was, it just popped into my head.
Yeah, but the dense cities are some of the coolest things about the Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah.
London's pretty cool in Syndicate. It's not as cool as Paris, but
You know, I will say when I watched you play, was it Syndicate, the one that's in Paris?
Unity.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Paris actually was really cool in Unity. I will give that game that much.
I think a game that I love, all the settings as a whole are, well, the first two Donkey Kong Country games in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The first game's interesting because it overwhelmingly, I mean, like, there's fantasy elements to it, obviously. I mean, it's a gorilla and a tie, for God's sake. But just the recreations of, like, the jungle, the forest, the temples that you go to, the underwater areas, all of it's just so, you know, amazingly well done. The factory. And then the second game's kind of cool because it kind of is retreading some of that territory, but it skews more fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you have the giant beehive, or you're, you know, kind of tropical, but you're on a pirate ship, you know, and then the magma area.
Isn't it the carnival, too? Like, yep, the crazy carnival?
Think about this, but I think that's actually one of the reasons I don't like the second game as much.
Because it's not as realistic?
Well, not, I don't know if I put it as realistic, but the settings are just a little harder to take seriously.
Hmm.
The third game starts to skew back to being, I feel, more realistic like the first game. But the third game kind of ditches the jungle and goes hard into, like, forest. And there's a little bit of forest in the first game, but the third game is heavily forest and mountain. And there's something about it that's just, there's not enough of a mix, I feel like. And so it's, I do like a lot of those areas, but it's the weakest of the three visually when it comes to the settings.
And musically.
No, it's got a good soundtrack.
Definitely musically. Anyway. I mean, it's just the weakest of the three for sure. But
anyway,
I don't know if this is just me and this is just my own biases coming out, but I felt like the third game had kind of like a hillbilly vibe that I wasn't really digging at times.
A little bit. Like the bears are like these kind of woodsy bear people.
Yeah.
And is there a country jamboree?
Is there? I don't know if there's a jamboree.
But, no, I just didn't really care for that much. You know, the sawmill and like that whole kind of the river, like it's just not really my type of setting.
Not your cup of sweet tea?
No, I don't like sweet tea. I take my tea without sugar. Thank you.
I do like forests generally.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Me too.
Give me that green.
It's just like the quintessential, you know, fantasy setting is the forest. And
Breath
I love
of the
it.
Wild gave Link his first, like, well, ignoring the Super Nintendo and NES entries, but like his first true 3D forest to go through. Yeah. Like everything else, it was always like a little smattering of trees or like.
Or in Ocarina of Time, they're all pre-rendered backgrounds.
Exactly. But like you get into Breath of the Wild, and it's like, whoa, you really are in nature in this one. You know, it's like, and that feels, I think that's why that it feels like there's such a connection between it and the first game. Like, not just the freedom of exploration, but like the setting. Like, mm-hmm. You are really in, you know, this giant unexplored world. Unexplored for the player, of course.
Yeah.
People living in it, but it's pretty amazing.
I've never really been a big sci-fi fan. Just generally speaking, whether you're talking about games or other forms of media, you know, so games like Mass Effect have never really appealed to me. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the, you know, quintessential women don't seem to love sci-fi very much sort of issue, but it's just kind of boring to me, which is why games like Metroid, for example, stand out to me. Because it is unusual for me that I would like it that much.
Well, you're drawn to creepier stuff.
Yeah.
I think you're also maybe warmer on Dead Space than you are on most. Like, maybe I'm wrong. I thought you were.
You can't necessarily
play Dead Space.
Yeah,
but
that's what that's. I was trying to frame my answer. Yes, like Dead Space is definitely more appealing to me than, say, Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. But I can't do it. It's too much.
Do you not like interstellar sci-fi, but maybe if you put like in a creepy future-y environment, that's okay. Like, because like Dead Space takes place in kind of a contained setting. Mm-hmm. Even if you move settings, it's like you're in a creepy derelict space station, mm-hmm. or spaceship, or you're in a creepy future mall that's mm-hmm. been shut down after hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then Metroid is like caverns. Like, it's sci-fi, but aside from your power armor, mostly it's just you're going through, like, weird caves.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Star Fox 64 is one of my favorite games, and that's... Look at you shaking your head. It's
always something negative to say about the greatest game.
The worst setting is Furry World.
It's not Furry World.
Not at all.
Get out of here. How dare you? Anyway, you know, that's another one that is an exception to the rule for me. Star Fox, the one on the Super Nintendo and the one on the N64, Star Fox 64. I love those games. I think they're great, but just overall, sci-fi just doesn't really speak to me.
Speaking of exception to the rule, I thought of another desert setting I really liked. Metal Gear Solid 5.
Mm-hmm.
That made Afghanistan very interesting. And, like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And, it, like, yes, you're in the desert, but, like, there, it feels like there's a lot of visual variety. Mm-hmm. And that's another just masterful desert playground to fool around in.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about sci-fi?
I don't dislike it. I mean, I was a Star Wars fan growing up. I think when it starts to get, like, super hard sci-fi, I'm not as interested. But my tastes have changed a little bit, I think, as I've gotten older. Like, I really love the original Star Trek TV show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a video game, but, like, that's pretty sci-fi, and I enjoy it. In terms of video games, I thought Jet Force Gemini had a really neat setting, all the alien worlds, but then, like, some of the spaceships that you're in, that was really cool. Wipeout, like, those kind of racing games, F-Zero, that futuristic sci-fi setting really works for me. Trying to think of other examples.
And I know, Angela, this is, like, maybe a subset of sci-fi or a subgenre, but you do seem to really like cyberpunk stuff. You like Midgar in Final Fantasy VII. You like Ruiner. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. It really has to work for me. You said, did you say cyberpunk? How'd you describe it again?
Yeah.
It's like cyberpunk. Yeah. Yeah. More of like a kind of cyber, like future, you know, whatever.
Always some grit.
Yeah, yeah, some, like, yeah, more atmospheric, yes, ground-level sci-fi, all the stuff we're talking about,
yes,
right?
Yeah, because, you know, Ruiner is a great example. Because Ruiner, you know, there is a city for you to explore. And
Rangkok.
Yes. And I do wish that Rycon had put more into Rangkok, but, you know, there are limitations that a smaller studio has to work with, but the places you could go and the little nooks and crannies and the conversations you could eavesdrop on, like, it was super interesting. And, you know, thinking of other media, like, you know, the original Blade Runner, I really enjoyed. And, I just had it in my head. It was something else that you mentioned in addition to Ruiner.
Midgar.
Yes. Yeah.
Final Fantasy VII.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super interesting looking around and, that's a good one. Thank you for reminding me.
Sure. I think the kind of like biome kind of settings, the one big standout that hasn't been mentioned that I love to death is like caves, subterranean spelunking, networks of caverns, mossy caves.
I'll tell you.
Crystal caves.
I will tell you, I really don't like caves. They bore me. And I also associate caves with Pokemon and desperately needing repel. Otherwise, it's just every few feet you're getting stopped by a Zubat or whatever, or Golbat. And I just...
Look, I'm not saying every cave is good. Mount Moon is no good.
I'm trying to think of caves I like. I mean, the caves in Donkey Kong Country are interesting. There's some caves that you go through in Donkey Kong Country 3 that are really neat, especially because they incorporate some water.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that feeling of, like, the water while you're underground. Metal Gear Solid 3 has some cave sections that are interesting. And also, like, some water mixed in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wish I could just get that gizmo from Men in Black and wipe all knowledge of Donkey Kong Country out of your brain.
Sounds like someone here is just a little jealous that they can't get into the Donkey Kong Country groove.
The caves in Witcher 3 I'll give you this much. They were a mixed bag for me. Some of them were super fascinating, and some of them were very unnerving. Obviously intentional, but, like, I didn't really enjoy it because I was getting a little, feeling a little uneasy. I cannot do caves in horror games. I cannot do it when I...
Like the mines in Resident Evil 4.
Oh my god, dark. Yeah, the mines in that game.
They're not even that dark.
The mines...
What are you talking about?
The mines...
Yeah, here's a big light.
In Days Gone. When I was playtesting that game, I had to take off my headset. Because it was too much. Like, going through the caves, it is pitch black.
Zubats everywhere.
You know, jump scares everywhere. And so the only thing I could do to alleviate my fear was take off the headset. And then I started doing that pretty regularly. And they asked me later why I was doing... Like, wait, when we noticed that you were taking off your headset, why was that? And I said, because that was the only way I was able to get through this playtest. Because if I took off the headset, I wasn't as immersed. And then I was just hearing the sounds of, like, people cussing, people getting mad, people getting scared, and then laughing at themselves for getting scared. Like, yeah. So that kind of took me out of my fear. But no, those caves were effed up.
Best.
Those caves were. It's wrong.
I will extend my love of caves to catacombs and subterranean structures more generally. A couple standouts for me are in Dark Souls 2. There's in one of the DLCs, this cave, huge hollowed out space. It's not like narrow tunnels. It's this huge hollowed out space with like an entire city that has like sunk through the earth and is now completely ensconced in this cave, the sunken city of Shulva, which is this ancient ruin in the middle of a cave. Super cool. And the other thing I want to mention is in Dragon's Dogma, not any particular cave, but Dragon's Dogma, more than any game I can think of that has a day-night cycle, the night is inky black. Like in a lot of games, when it goes into like the nighttime visuals, it's just kind of like a dark blue tint on things. And in Dragon's Dogma, it's like being underground. Like if there are like wolves or goblins growling in the darkness, if you don't have a torch up, you're not seeing anything. It's not that it's harder to see. You can't see anything. Mm-hmm. You cast fire spells in that game just to get a glimpse of what you're looking at. So the caverns in Dragon's Dogma are all super creepy because there are things down there, you know, and it just like it's terrifying and exhilarating.
Well, it's like Metal Gear Solid 4. You go through this European town and it's at night, and that does a really good job of making it truly feel like it's nighttime. It's also like kind of creepy because there's some people out and about, but not really, and you're avoiding getting detected. But then there's also this creepy arm thing that's crawling around, and they're trailing you, and you actually don't realize it unless you find out later. Like, I don't know if the game tells you, but like you can actually see that they're trailing you. So it's even creepier to think you're going through sneaking and don't even know you're still being watched the whole time, whether you're aware of it or not. That's another really good setting. Also another good urban setting.
I guess part of it for sure was urban, but I played almost through the entirety of Call of Duty Cold War, the campaign. And it was really interesting. It was really good, but just a lot of standout moments were going through a lot of the settings that you were put into. One that really sticks out is you're going through, it's like KGB, like a KGB training ground. And, you know, the KGB would create fake American cities. They'd go full scale, like real, like true to life scale, to practice, you know, attacking American cities. And so you're I don't even remember, because it's been a while since I played this game, so I don't remember all the details. I just remember you're going through their compound, and you're actually you make your way to the training facility, and you know you and you know the other characters are like, at first you're confused. You're like, what is this? Like, why am I in an arcade? And then you know what is now I'm on the street and it looks like I'm back home. And then they realize what it is and they're pretty disgusted and angry. And but it's really neat. Or like, you know, you're going through these European towns, and at one point you have to like sneak into someone's house to I think get a briefcase or something like that. And it's super interesting, just like the details in this person's home. And then you go undercover, like from the point of view of an undercover, you know, like KGB agent or whatever. And you're in, what were their headquarters called again?
The Kremlin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're saying that was the name of the headquarters?
Right.
I can't remember.
Like the KGB is the agency.
Yes. Yeah, I guess it was the Kremlin.
I could be wrong.
I can't remember right now. But anyway, you're there. Like, you're in the belly of the beast. And it's pretty nerve-wracking because you're playing this double agent.
Yeah.
Who's working with the CIA, but he's also a KGB agent. So the whole thing is just like, it's really interesting and super unnerving and creepy. Being in their headquarters and playing double agent, but like it really, the level of detail that they put into that setting was really good.
Do you guys know that this reminds me of there's a Travolta movie which I have not seen. It was from like somewhere in that long period between his successes, so sometime after like the Saturday Night Fever, Grease period, mm-hmm. before Pulp Fiction, where he's playing an American and. Like, for some reason, the American is in Russia in, I think he's supposed to be, like, teaching them something so that, or he's, like, brought over so that the Russians can learn from him how to better pretend to be Americans for, like, spy purposes. Mm-hmm. But they have him living in, like, this weird recreation of 1950s America because their idea of America. So like the movie takes place in the 80s, I think, mm-hmm. but it's like a 1950s rocker America. Mm. And of course the way the movie works is he ends up like converting the whole town to being pro-democracy, but it's just like this whole like idea of a Russian fake American mm-hmm. town.
Well, speaking of Call of Duty, one thing that matters with setting that maybe we haven't talked about a lot is, you know, the audio can have a big impact. Mm-hmm. And, I remember playing Call of Duty, I think it was Cold War. What's it called? Cold War? Not Cold War. Call of Duty Black Ops. Oh, it was okay. Call of Duty Black Ops 2. And I believe the level was Silo. It's like the Silo level. And you're in Pakistan, I think. And I remember playing with my friends online and... Where I live, I don't have to worry about, like, sound. So I have a stereo system hooked up to my game. So I'm not playing with a headset. It's actually around me, you know, from speakers. And, man, there was a point on the level where I think, like, the silo's opening up and maybe, like, a rocket's firing. I just remember there was this incredible moment where the sound just seemed so real. Mm-hmm. Like, they had done such an incredible job of implementing it. And I asked my friends, I was like, does anybody else hear, like, what I'm hearing right now? And my friend Phil, I can't remember if he was playing with stereo or if he just had a good headset, but he said he was noticing it too. And it's like, man, like the visuals of it was already well done, but to then have the audio suck you in even further, that was really incredible. Mm-hmm. That's one of the kind of cool things about video games is that I think... isn't it as far back as even, like, the Super Nintendo games were already starting to use Dolby sound for some of the audio?
I couldn't tell you.
Man, I'm going to say Donkey Kong Country again, but I could have swore the DK games might have had some Dolby stuff. But I know at least as far back as, like, the N64 era, they were already implementing incredible sound design. Mm-hmm. And that has a huge impact on recreating either an actual place or convincing you that you are somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
I want to say the PS2 might be the first console that actually has like an optical audio output built into it.
Hmm.
But I don't know what is like stereo mix versus having like more of a surround supported audio output. I'm not sure. If anyone's curious at home, the name of that Travolta movie is The Experts.
Thank you, Zach.
I've not seen it, but I'm sure it's wonderful, despite middling to low reviews.
Well, I don't think we can conclude any discussion of favorite settings without mentioning how beautiful Yoshi's Island is.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful aesthetic. That whole island setting, but with that child book, you know, veneer over it. You know, I forgot how, like, the first two worlds, you know, they're cool, they're really pretty. But when you get to the third world, where the monkeys show up, all of a sudden you're in the jungle, but, like, you're in these mud flat areas, and I forgot about them. And that's another example of, like, the audio complementing the setting,
mm-hmm.
because your footsteps sound so thick and chunky mm-hmm. on the mud.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way the use of color and the way that, you know, they played with different, little bits of lighting in that game. Like, man, it's incredible. I'm curious what that game looked like before they had to redo it. Because I think the urban legend is that they told Miyamoto, Donkey Kong Country looks too good. Your game doesn't look good enough. You need to go scrap the visuals.
Mm.
So it's like, what did it look like before? Like, because it's pretty incredible. You know,
is that
now.
Not part of any of like the Giga leaks that have come out?
I think there's some sprites, but I don't think there's like actual like the backgrounds and everything. I have not dug into the Giga leak in depth, so I might be wrong. But
the visuals in the underground caves in Yoshi's Island are very good. The sparkling and, like you said, some light effects that go on in there.
Well, that's like they have some atmospheric fog mm-hmm. in a couple of the underground levels. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, this is really impressive mm-hmm. for a Super Nintendo game. It still looks as good as anything new.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It's too bad it plays like Yoshi's Island.
Incredibly. I mean,
get out of here.
And there's an abundance of Shy Guys, including little tribal guys with their spears.
So many different Shy Guys. It's wonderful.
Any other settings either of you think we should talk about?
No, I think
the lava levels, sky levels.
I think the final. I actually don't really care for sky levels, but
yeah, I don't like sky levels either. Boring.
Yeah, I think the final thing I would mention. It's probably just more, I guess, general fantasy, which I do like, but like Dark Souls and Bloodborne are super interesting because they are fantasy, but it's like it's twisted and it's
gothic.
Dark and gothic, yeah. And I think that's super. It's super appealing. It's super interesting. It's creepy, but it's also not so creepy that I feel like scared to explore. But it's. I mean, maybe at some points, but it's very well done.
No, I think the Souls games are great for that. I really love. Yeah, like the dark fantasy and some of the weird, like the mimics in Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Dark Souls didn't invent mimics, but the mimic as a like a chest where it has teeth, but all the teeth are fingers. And there's a giant tongue and like a weird, like the body that extends from a mimic looks like, if you've ever seen like Japanese theater, they mm-hmm. have these people like dressed in all black,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
The mimic looks like that, but with a chest for a head with finger teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool. The other monster in Dark Souls, I mean, there's a bunch of weird ones. The other one that always stuck out to me is in the third game. It's like an ogre with like a hand for a head.
Hmm.
Like it's got hands where your hands would go, but also the head is a hand.
Mm.
And I think so I can grab you with the head. It's just like these weird kind of body horror elements to the monster designs in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I love them.
I thought I had plugged Demon's Souls in a few months back, and that setting was also really cool. It's mm-hmm. like, I know Demon's Souls is the precursor to the Dark Souls games.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so beautiful still, mm-hmm. even mm-hmm. on PS3. When you die, you end up in this like weird kind of like chamber.
The Nexus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, that still was very impressive looking at it.
I remember when the trailer for the whatever remake or whatever port of Demon's Souls for PS5 came out. Zach had mentioned he did not care for it, didn't care for this remastered look because he felt like it had lost a lot of its ambiance, its overall feel.
Yeah, the graphically, like technically, Demon's Souls is, on the PS3 isn't that strong compared to the later games, even on the same system. But part of how they, I guess, cover that up or how they make the atmosphere work is a lot of weird, sickly glows on a lot of things. And it makes sense because the game's lore talks about this thick, colorless fog rolling in over everything. And everyone is like actually like a soul trapped in the Nexus. So it makes sense. But yeah, like the remake looks so colorful and so crisp. And like it looks good. Mm-hmm. But it looks good in kind of a like a generic way that you would expect from, I don't mean this to be xenophobic, but a Chinese-made action game that was like designed to be like free to play for a mobile audience.
It's, I mean, this
that's a little strong, but
this comes up in the Grezzo remakes of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. They look beautiful, they do, but they are not as appealing to me as the N64 graphics.
Mm-hmm.
Even the like Virtual Console cleaned up, sharpened N64 graphics, in my opinion, look better than.
Yeah, be careful. You're going to get him talking about like preservation and filters and original hardware. Yeah. And we
know, it's interesting you should mention that because I actually was thinking how, like, it's sort of like with Hollywood movies.